I'm going to call on Gary to lead us in our opening prayer. We're in the book of Judges, and we're ready for the story of Samson. And Samson was, there were two judges, Eli and Samuel, after him. So the wife of Manoah was in the field, or I don't know exactly where it was, the angel of the Lord appeared unto the woman and reminded her of something she knew very well, that she was barren and had not been able to have a child. But the angel told her that she was going to conceive and bear a son. And she was to take some unusual steps. One of the three women in the Bible who conceived a son that was a Nazarite from birth. That made very, very unusual, certainly unusual in connection with Samson, for reasons that I'll mention in a moment. So, her husband's name was Manoah, and so the angel appeared to her and told her she was going to conceive and have a child, and in verse 4 he says, I pray, beware, I pray thee, and drink no wine nor strong drink, and eat not any unclean thing. And for lo, you shall conceive and bear a son, and no razor shall come upon his head. That was one of the features of a Nazarite vow, that you would not shave the head. But like I said, John was a Nazarite, Samuel was a Nazarite from birth, and so Samson is also going to be a Nazarite from birth. And the head would not be shaven and so on. One of the peculiar things about Samson is that one of the rules of the Nazarite was touch no unclean thing. The thing is, Samson had to touch some unclean things because he killed some people and stuff like that. So seemingly it didn't apply to him. The Lord did not apply that to him because he did many things which would ordinarily have made one unclean, and he was not unclean. So she told her husband about what the angel had said, and she described the angel. She said, a man of God came to me, and his countenance was like the countenance of the angel of God, very terrible or very awesome. And I ask him not whence he was, neither told me his name. But he said unto me, you shall conceive and bear a son, and now drink no wine nor strong drink, and eat not any unclean thing, for the child shall be a Nazarite unto God from the womb to the day of his death. So that was the idea. So Manoah just felt like he had to have more information about this. This is a very unusual child that was going to be born, and he wanted to know if he needed to do anything special. So he said to God, let the man of God, and you have to understand that they were a little uncertain about the nature of this being. So he said, this man of God, oh, I pray thee, let the man of God whom thou didst send come again to us and teach us what we shall do unto the child that shall be born. Now, the fact is, this divine being, because I'm convinced that's what he was, a divine being, in fact, generally, in that situation, he was actually the pre-incarnate Jesus. That's who he was. And so almost certainly throughout the Bible, that seems to be the case. And sometimes there's pretty good evidence of that specifically. But here he says, let the man of God. So Manoah is not sure about that. But God hearkened. And notice in verse 9, God, there's the word God hearkened to the voice of Manoah. So once again, the angel of the Lord came to the woman as she sat in the field. But Manoah, her husband, was not there. So again, it's interesting. Instead of the angel appearing to Manoah, he appeared to Manoah's wife and had her to send for Manoah. So she went and hurried and told her husband, hey, the man, and again, once again, see, the man, the man appeared unto me that came to me the other day. So Manoah arose very quickly, came to the man, and he said, are you the man that spake unto my wife? And the angel said, I am. And Manoah said, let your words come to pass. First of all, we'd like the baby. See, let your words come to pass. And what shall be the ordering of the child? How shall we treat him? Now, really, the information had already been given, and there was nothing changed. So the angel said, of all that I said unto the woman, let her beware. She may eat, she may not eat of anything that cometh from the vine. And that's the grapevine. This has to do with grape juice and so on. Cometh of the vine, neither let her drink wine or strong drink, nor eat any unclean thing. And all that I commanded her, let her observe. So Manoah was now convinced that this was some kind of a very supernatural being. And I think as time went along, he became convinced that this was the angel of the Lord. So he said unto the angel of the Lord, let us detain you that we may make ready a kid for you. And that was a common thing. A kid was a common offering in the circumstance. And though, so the angel said unto Manoah, though you detain me, I will not eat of thy bread. And if thou wilt make ready a burnt offering, thou must offer it unto Jehovah. Because this angel had to be concerned that Manoah was not going to understand that this was a very unusual circumstance. In fact, the angel wanted to impress upon Noah his own deity. So he made it clear that I'm not just going to eat a meal. I'm not just going to eat a meal. So I'm not going to sit down and just eat a meal. So notice he says, in verse, the last part of verse 16, for Manoah knew not that he was an angel of the Lord. And so, I will not eat your bread. If you will make an offering, you must offer it unto, and here he uses the word Jehovah, Yahweh. You must offer it unto him. So then the Manoah said to the angel of the Lord, what is your name that when your words come to pass that we may do you honor? And I remembered in Isaiah 9 in verse 6, one of the things there is, his name shall be wonderful. That's the same word here, wonderful. So you see, that was talking about the Messiah in Isaiah 9. So here, it is wonderful. So, wonderful. And that's from the Hebrew word pele. And it's used a number of times. So the angel said, wherefore do you ask after my name, seeing it is wonderful? So that's the same word that we have in Isaiah 9. So Manoah took the kid with a meal offering and offered it upon the rock unto the Lord, and the angel did wondrously. And what he did, Manoah and his wife looked on. They observed here. And when the flame went up toward heaven from the altar was merely a rock because they didn't have a formal altar. They didn't have time to build a formal altar. So when the flame went up toward heaven from the altar. So there's nothing said about what produced the flame, but it was just a divine manifestation. So when the flame went up toward heaven from off the altar, then the angel of the Lord ascended in the flame of the altar. So this angel just kind of goes up and in some way merges with that flame and goes up. You know, that's not normal behavior. So what would that convince you of? You're dealing with some kind of a supernatural thing. So as they looked, they fell on their faces to the ground. And that was in respect, reverence. And the angel of the Lord did no more appear to Manoah or his wife. So then, what did Manoah know then? What does it say? He knew what? That he was an angel of the Lord. And Manoah said to his wife, "Oh no, we're going to die. We've seen the Lord." So that also points to the view of Manoah that this was a celestial being. "We shall surely die because we have seen God." You see that? You see the angel of the Lord? Here he equates him with God. Well, that's the truth. So, "Oh, we're going to die. We've seen God." But his wife said, "If the Lord were pleased to kill us, he would not have received a burnt offering and a meal offering. He wouldn't have received that. And neither would he have showed us all these things. And as these." So the woman bare a son. So she did have the son that she wanted, of course. They really had to learn some things. You know, you would think this boy, when he was born, what was special about him? Well, you might say, he was that big, muscle bulging. The thing about it is, there's not a word said about the mental, that mean the physical makeup of him. It doesn't say he had big bulging muscles, because that's not where he got his strength from. Now, I doubt if he looked like some kind of wimp, but that's not where he got his strength from. The things he did, there is no way any ordinary man, no matter how big he is, could do. Not at all. So she bare a son, and he grew, and the Lord blessed him. In verse 25, the Spirit of the Lord began to move him in Maanah Dan, the camp of Dan. That's what it means. Maanah is used in other times, like when Jacob saw the Lord, saw the angel of the Lord. He called it Mahanaim. Mahanaim is a double word, means two camps. So it's the camp of the Lord and the camp of Jacob. Mahanadan. Mahanaim. So that's the idea here. Mahanadan, between Zorah and Eshtal. All right. You will notice that I have a map over here. And you'll notice that it's brighter. That's because we have a new bulb. And several were saying, "I'd like a new bulb too." A lot of us would like a new bulb. I would like a new bulb. But the action in this story, there's action that takes place in Ashkelon, Gaza, and Timnah is one of the, and Sorek, the valley of Sorek, that's where Delilah lived and everything like that. Timnah was one of the fields near where he had a girlfriend and so on. So Ashkelon is that's where he killed the 30 men and so on. So Gaza. So that's the area where the story of Samson occurs. The Valley of Sorek, Timnah, Ashkelon, and Gaza. So that area. Okay? I wanted you to see that that area. So that's where the action is concerned. All right. So Samson. I would have hated to have to deal with a son like Samson. And the reason becomes very clear. Chapter 14, Samson went down to Timnah over there, where I showed you a moment ago, and he saw a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. That means she was a pagan woman, not a non-Israelite. And so he came up and he said to his father and mother, "I've seen a woman in Timnah. Get her for me to wife." I kind of word that like I think he probably said, get her for me to wife. That's the one I want. I'm not real impressed. There are a lot of things I'm not real impressed with about Samson. And that raises the question of why would the Lord use Samson? And what we have to understand is we can imagine all kinds of reasons why God chose Samson, to use Samson. But do you know what I have to do? I have to see if I can figure out why God did it. I can't make up reasons. So when we talk about why God used Samson, I can't make up reasons. I can think of things, but you know, if God decided to use Samson for the purposes that he chose, that was God's business. That was God's business. And although I can speculate and say all kinds of things about it, I can't nail down why God did that. There are some things that I think are fairly obvious, but again, I can't prove these things. I can't prove that was God's thinking. You see, I think we need to be very careful when we get on the end of God's stick, his end of the stick. I know what he was thinking. I don't know what God was thinking, and I think it's it's beyond what we should be trying to do. So I can guess some things, and they may be. So I want to make that clear. So as I look at Samson and God's use of Samson, this is, look at the state of Israel at this time. Now I'm going to ask you, what was the state of Israel at this time spiritually? What did they just come through? What were they coming through? This was the period of the what? The judges. Now, what was the circumstance of during the period of the judges? What was Israel's circumstance or circumstances during the period of the judges? Up and down. Talk about that a moment. That's right. That's right. Very good. That's right. So you see, that had been the circumstance. And it had been for a long time, many, many years, up and down, just like you said. So here is a man who is born, and what does he turn out to have? What does he turn out, what would be the main thing you would say about Samson? He was strength. Oh, boy, he was strong. Now, that strong was not, as I said, not because he had the musculature. It was given to him from God. So here was strength given to Samson from God. Now, as Israel looked at Samson and the situation of Samson, what could they think? Now, this is a possibility, and I think it's a likely one. What would they think as they saw Samson as an object lesson? In Samson, what did they see about God? He could make Samson strong, strong beyond any imagination. What could God do for Israel? Make them strong. There'd be nothing they could not do. So I think that is the thing. That's one of the main things to observe, that God used Samson as an object lesson. And Samson was very careful. For example, when he was talking to Delilah about what the source of his strength was, what did he keep? Of course, he's foolish in the way he dealt with it, because eventually he told her. But what was it he preserved? He did not tell her what? It was his hair. So he tried to preserve those things, and he understood, one of the things, he understood that his strength came from God. I don't think there was any doubt. He understood his strength came from God. And so there are a number of passages where we can see that he thinks that. And that was true. He understood that. So in him, God used as an example that here is what Israel could be. This is what you people in Israel, this is what you could be. This is what you could have. You could have this strength, my strength. You could have it at your disposal. And, you know, that was the time when every man that did that which was right in Israel, in his own eyes. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes in Israel. And what they needed to be doing was what was right in God's eyes. That's right. So they needed to understand that. So I think that God used as an object lesson Samson of what he could do for them and so on. So now he goes down and he says, I've seen a woman in Timnah of the daughter of the Philistines. Now therefore get her to me to wife. Is there never a woman among the daughters of thy brethren or among all my people that you go and take a wife of the uncircumcised Philistines? And look in the rest of verse 3. Donald, have it reading the rest of verse 3 there. 14. Looks good, yeah. Historically, many men have chosen the wife for them on the basis of what? Looks. Get her to me for wife. She pleases me well. Get her for me, she pleases me well. So what did it say? What was the wording there?
Get her for me, for she looks good.
I imagine that's exactly right. Yeah, that's the one I want. In verse 4, read verse 4 as well.
However, his father and mother did not know that it was of the Lord, for he was seeking an occasion against the Philistines. Now at the time,
all right, so the Philistines over there on the coastal plain, they were in charge. And they had the Israelites under their thumb. And now one of the things, God did not make Samson do anything wrong. But when God saw an inclination of Samson, then God was willing to use that inclination of Samson to involve the Philistines in a situation where God was going to show them that who he was. And so God is going to use this one. So God did not make Samson pick this woman. But when Samson picked this woman, then God said, all right, I have an opportunity here. Now then, what was God going to do with that opportunity when he chose a woman of the Philistines? God was going to show what he could do, what he could do with Israel. So, that's the situation. All right, so Samson, by the way, what would Samson be afraid of? He'd be afraid of maybe a lion. He wasn't afraid of anything. What did he need to be afraid of? Well, he needed to be afraid of God, but he wasn't afraid of anything. So, as he was going down, he came to the vineyards of Timnah, and behold, a young lion roared against him. Now, this doesn't mean a baby lion. It means a lion in his vigor, a young lion. You know, there are things that about that. I remember a situation where we had a nephew, and that was Kurt, not Kevin. But we had a nephew named Kurt. We were in the lion house, everything like that. And Kurt was there, and he was just a little fella. I don't remember about how big. He was big enough to climb up Santa. And that lion roared. Have you ever heard a lion roar in his strength? Whew, it is a frightening thing. And so this lion roared. A lot of times the lion will roar to kind of petrify its prey. It didn't petrify Samson. So the lion came out against Samson. Now what would the lion do? He'd come out and it would spring on Samson. And it says that Samson took that lion and tore it apart as you would do a little kid. Not a child, but a kid, like a goat, a little goat that's helpless. He took that lion and tore it apart. Oh, that's something else. There is no way any unarmed man could do that. There's no way. We have circumstances of people killing lions with a knife, with clubs, various circumstances, but there is no way you could kill a full-grown lion with any ordinary means. And Samson took him and tore him apart like he was a little baby goat. Now that was over there in that area of the coastal plain. And after a while, Samson went by there. Let me go back. He went by there, and he killed that lion, all right? But he didn't tell his mom and daddy about that. So he killed the lion, and notice it, the Spirit of the Lord. Look at that. See, the Spirit of the Lord. It is attributable to the Lord. That's what gave him his strength. So he rent him as he would have rent a kid. And notice what else it says. He had nothing in his hand. You see that? Barehanded. Nothing in his hand. But he did not tell his father or mother what he had done. So he went down and talked with a woman. He was courting her. Went down and talked with a woman. And she pleased Samson well. So after a while, he returned to take her and to... As he was traveling along, what did he have to turn aside and see? The carcass. Now the thing about it is, and I think there's one choice here. Lawrence, I wanted to ask you, what do bees usually do with a decaying carcass? Do they have anything to do? No, they will not have anything to do with a decaying carcass. However, in a circumstance like this, in a certain area, certainly in Egypt, but also in this territory, if the thing did not pass through, it dried too fast to go through a state of putrefaction. And it just dried up before there was any degree of decomposition. Then it would basically make just a chunk of leather. And so the bees made their hive in a chunk of leather. And that's what they did. And so old Samson came along there, and he saw that, what had happened. And the bees had made their hive in a chunk of leather that the lion had become. And so what he did as he went along, there was a swarm of bees in the body of the lion and honey. And he took it into his hands and went on eating as he went. I always think of Samson. Boy, this is good. I'm glad I killed that lion. And so as he goes along, what does he do with the honey? This is a delicacy. I mean, this kind of sweetness was not freely available in everything. Only a few places could you get that sweetness, like some of the wine or something like that. So you couldn't get that everywhere. So that was a delicacy. And he gave unto them, and they ate. And he didn't say, hey, you know where I got this? He didn't tell them about that. So they went on with the plans. They went down to the woman and Samson. They there made a feast. So used the young men to do. And it came to pass when they saw him, they brought 30 companions to be with him. 30 companions to be with him. So there was a celebration here. The wedding celebration went on for a good while. And so Samson said, hey, I have a riddle. And this, in ancient times, this was a very common thing. So Samson wanted to declare them a riddle. And let me put forth a riddle unto you. If you can declare unto me within 7 days of the feast and find it out, then I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 changes of raiment. But if you cannot declare it to me, then you will give me 30 linen garments and 30 changes of raiment. And they said, go ahead, put forth your riddle that we may hear it. And so he said, out of the eater came forth food, out of the strong came forth sweetness. Now he kind of disguised it a little bit, but yet the basic facts were there. And that was the point of a riddle. Out of the eater came forth food. Out of the strong came forth sweetness. So they tried. They tried to decipher this. 3 days passed, and they could not decipher the thing. Now, there were 3 days, but more days passed by. Because you notice, in verse 15, on the seventh day, they said unto Samson's wife, entice your husband. Now, do you understand that she was already regarded as Samson's wife? And that was because of the custom that you had the thing that really was the end of the thing was when you went to her house and got her and brought her to your house. That had not happened yet. See, so the feast was still going on, yet she was referred to as Samson's wife. So they said to her, entice your husband that he may declare unto us the riddle, lest we burn you and your father's house with fire. Have you called us just to impoverish to take what we have? That was the idea. So now 3 days had gone by. They could not tell the riddle in 3 days. And then the seventh day, likely most people feel that she didn't make any inquiry until the day. And she just, what was going to happen if she didn't find out the answer? What was going to happen to the, well, first of all, what would the Philistines do? Kill her. So, she wept before him. Now I would suppose that you women have never done anything like crying just to hope that that will get your way or anything like that. I mean, you wouldn't do that, right? You wouldn't use that as a tool, would you? Don't answer. But they're powerful tears, aren't they? I know that. So Samson's wife wept before him. Oh, you do but hate me. You don't love me. You've put forth a riddle unto the children of my people, and you've not told it to me. You haven't even told me. Why, behold, I've not told it to my father nor my mother. Shall I tell you? Verse 17. Jeff, what did she keep on doing? All right. So now she finds out. So what does she promptly do? Tell the Philistines. Oh, now I know. She told the riddle. And I can just see those Philistines as they gather. Because, of course, they know that Samson has no, at the present, it doesn't take Samson long to find out. But they think, boy, we're going to spring it on him. He doesn't have any idea that we know. And so I can just see their faces. The men of the city said unto him, on the seventh day, before the sun went down, what is sweeter than honey and stronger than a lion? Jeff, go ahead and read the rest of that verse. If you had not plowed with my heifer, did they figure that out? Of course. They knew exactly what he meant. So if you had not plowed with my heifer, you had not found out my riddle. All right, now the Spirit of the Lord. Notice again, the thing is the Spirit of the Lord. There are numbers of times, every time, many times, that's the point. The Spirit of the Lord came upon Samson. That explains why he was able to do these extraordinary things. It came mightily upon him, and he went down to Ashkelon. And Andy, what did he do in Ashkelon? You can't, okay, I'm sorry. That's all right then. Well, I'll tell you what he did. He killed him. Do you notice how many he killed? Why 30? That the number of garments. So he killed 30 Philistines and took their garments and gave them to the 30 men who had guessed his riddle. Would you call that poetic justice? They cheated, so now he's going to cheat. Since they cheated, it's all right for him to cheat. So he's going to give them what he promised. But he took their spoil and gave the changes of raiment to them that declared the riddle. And his anger was kindled, and he went up to his father's house. Ha! He is not ready to see that woman again, not yet. But he will. And verse 20, but Samson's wife was given to his companion. Now that word companion would be the one that we would call a best man. The best man. See, that's the idea, the best man. So Samson's wife was given to his companion, whom he had used as his friend, as his best man. So time went along. And now Samson's thinking it over. Now he was very angry. What happens, though, after a while? Maybe I was too hard or something like that. I remember that girl that I took a shine to. I think I'm going to go back and see her again. Okay. So in the time of harvest, the wheat harvest, Samson visited his wife with a kid. Now, again, this is either a small lamb or a small, the word is used equally of a lamb or of a goat. And you would think, man, that wouldn't make any difference to me to get a kid. But that was a very common thing when on an occasion such as this, that you would take a kid and give it to the woman. So that was typical. So he visited his wife with a kid, and he said, I will go into my wife into the chamber. But her father said, No, you can't do that. I thought you hated her. You utterly hated her. Therefore, I gave her to your companion. Is not her younger sister fair? Isn't that something? Or her younger sister is prettier than she is. Take her. Easy come, easy go. So that was the plan. And so So Samson said, "Ah." And the footnote says, "I shall be quits with the Philistines. This time I shall be blameless in regard to the Philistines when I do them a mischief." What do you have in your text? When I do what? Harm. That's exactly. He was going to do harm, wasn't he? Yeah, he was going to do harm. "This time I shall be blameless in regard to the Philistines when I do them a mischief." And he went out and he caught 300 jackals. Now, the word is fox. The word in the text is fox, but it is common to refer to the jackal or the fox in the same way. Because the fox has a loping stride and so on, similar to the jackal. And so that's what he did. He trapped these 300. And I like to think about Samson as he traps these animals. What would these animals tend to do when they're being trapped, caught? What they tend to do? They would tend to bite you. But you see, there are several situations where Samson seems to have been impervious to bites and other things. He seemed to be impervious to those things. So he just caught those things, caught them, and he tied their tails together. Now, that wouldn't be a picnic, to tie their tails together. But he tied them together, So he had 300 pairs. So you've got a jackal or a fox here and one with his tail. What would they tend to do? Get away. As they tended to try to get away, what would they be doing? Yeah, guy all over the place. And he set them loose, and the Philistines standing grain. Now, as they went about, what would they be doing? They'd be zigzagging, wouldn't they? They'd zig this way and this way and this way. So what would that do? Yeah, they would cover the ground. It just ignite the whole field. So he did that. I mean, they burned the crops of the Philistines to the ground. Aha! Now I've paid them back. So that's what he did. So that's another episode here where he... and let me point out something else. All right. Now the first episode in this series... is he kills the young lion, and then the next one is the slaughter of the Philistines. That's in verse 19 through verse 20, 14, and then in 15 you have the story of the revenge by burning the crops of the Philistines. So that's the third story. All right, so we'll go ahead and stop at that point.